A good social story not only gives children the information that they need, but helps them imagine how they may feel and empower them to self-advocate when the situation arises. I can't wait to share this conversation today about how we can support our children with their communication through introducing and incorporating social stories into education. I really wanted to bring Catherine Hackman in today from Courageous Kids after I shared across my Instagram page about the fact that the school that my children attend is already using social stories to help kids understand the everyday happenings in school communities. And oh my goodness, it is an absolute game changer for so many kids. So, Catherine, good morning, my gorgeous human. How are you today?
I'm well. It's lovely to chat to you. Doesn't happen.
So exciting. So exciting. Now, you and I have been on the social story train or the bandwagon for many years. And I was just discussing to Catherine off air that, you know, we have been using social stories in specialist settings. I mean, this is not a new support or accommodation, guys. Social stories have been around since 1990, which for some people listening will be like, oh my goodness, that is so old. And they were first created by a woman called Carol Gray.
Correct.
So typically, in my experience, we've come a long way, obviously, but when I first started using social stories, they were predominantly for the autistic community, who we know have a very specific way of communicating, right? So we also know that our ADHDers have a very specific way of communicating, and often their brain wiring or neurotype stops them from actually fully understanding some of the communication and things that are being conveyed in classrooms, right? So this is why I wanted to bring you in. I want to give people the research, the evidence-backed understanding about why they work and then how we can implement them into the classroom and into family life, right?
Yep.
So you take it away. Tell us,
okay. Chrissy,
what is a social
on.
Story? What is a social story?
So a social story is a giving kids information in the form of a story, and it's a story with an express purpose of giving your child information about a new skill, a new concept, a new idea, or, and we can't forget this part, or reflecting on something that's happened or celebrating success. So I think we're often very forward tracked. We've got to prepare for this, and then it's A and then B and then C, but sometimes we've got to go and look back at A and say, you know what, for example, I had an emergency teacher in kinder today. It was really tricky and I was nervous, but I went in, my mum helped me and I did it. And in the end, it turned out that she was really nice. And I'm so proud that I coped with an emergency teacher because success builds success. And the point
absolutely.
Of all of this, or the point of all of these social stories, is if you give children the preparation they need, they're at least going to go in with the right foot forward. And if you can help set them up for success in advance, then they're going to do as well as they can.
It's also about safe, predictable routines, right? We
know
that many of our little friends who are neurodivergent, and many of our neurodivergent friends also have underlying anxiety.
And
which
even without neurodivergent,
absolutely.
Have anxiety.
Yeah, absolutely. Or our sensitive little souls who, you know, have that really strong need to be with a secure attachment at all times. When we're going into an unknown situation, who's going to be there? How many people? What are the sounds? What are the smells? What am I expected to do? Is somebody going to try and hug and kiss me that I'm not okay with? Or do you know what I mean? So many different variables for our kids. To me, the way that I describe it is it's basically just as much as we can, because we can't control every single thing that's going to happen, obviously, is to calm our child's brain or to answer some of those unknowns for them, so that when they enter that environment or that particular situation, they kind of know what's going to happen, right?
Exactly. You're spot on. You know, wherever we can create predictability and routine, we're going to bring a little bit of calm, and we're going to reduce the worry, and we're going to reduce the anxiety. So a good social story, and thanks for reading out that quote, a good social story will give your child that kind of information. And the process of giving it in a social story or in a story form is that your child is, you know, sat on your lap, cuddled into you, you have a shared gaze on a story with pictures, because our kids are visual learners. And you mentioned, you know, neurodivergent kids, you know, if you've got an autistic child and ADHD child, you know, if they can see themselves in the story, it's all very well to have a story about Joe Bloggs who has to go to school, but that's not me. Let Joe Bloggs do that. But if the story is about me and I'm going to school, then it helps your child imagine what's going to happen from that safe, secure environment of mum or dad's lap, or whoever's reading them the story. And then from that safety, they can imagine what might happen. You're going to build in the predictability. It's going to foster those discussions where your child can bring up those worries. And all the things that we can do to work through all of that noise in your child's head, mm-hmm. asking all their questions, will just help calm them down. Because it's not just about asking the question, you know, what's my teacher's favorite color going to be? It's going to be, how will I feel safe? Am I going to be safe? And that answering all those questions really goes to the heart of helping your child feel safe and secure in whatever new environment they're going into. And then answering all the what ifs before you get there really builds that sense of safety and security and predictability. And then when you add in photos, for example, of what the new space is going to look like, whether it's going to a dentist or having a new teacher at school, what that person's going to look like, again, you're building in another layer of familiarity even before they've walked in the door.
Oh, absolutely. And the one I shared on socials, which you said to me, your favorite part of the video was seeing our little feet tucked up together on the couch, because that's exactly what you're talking about. So it's using your secure attachment with your child to help them go out in the world, in the universe, and feel safe without you, right? Yep. And for some kids, that takes a lot more practice and a lot more softly approach and a lot more wraparound and support, right? Now, interestingly, the one that I shared was about the school sports day at our school. My son has never been on a sports day. And so I knew this was going to be huge for him. And I also knew...
Even been on a school bus.
Well, I've actually taken my kids on a bus because, you know, I'm across all that sort of stuff in terms of, do you know what I mean? Like, it's just what I've always done, because it's like, well, they're going to have to learn how to go on a bus. But I actually said that to my son and to my husband. Where we live now in Country Vic, kids rarely catch a bus or public transport, you know, and so that actually going on a bus is a big deal for some kids who've never actually done that, like you said before, right? And anyway, because our brain is wired to keep us safe, my gorgeous kiddo was like, I'm not going. I'm not doing sports day. It's going to be too noisy. No, thank you. Not happening, right? And when we understand that pervasive drive for autonomy for kids who do live with anxiety, it is an understanding that their brain will automatically say no to new experiences, or very often say no to new experiences, but that we can gently stretch their window of tolerance and encourage them to step out of that comfort zone with the right support around them, right? Yeah. And can I just say, he had the best day at sports day, absolutely loved it, smashed it, and I think even exceeded expectations for his educators and for himself. And what an amazing opportunity, just by me sitting with him, reading the social story that the school had created with photos of the oval where they're going, stepping it out, this is what's going to happen, this is where you'll be. The one thing that we did sort of discuss about was I will feel happy and my teachers will feel happy too, which quite a few people sort of picked up on that's not very neuroaffirming, because we don't have to be happy at sports day. But, you know, like, we're just picking holes in, you know, things sometimes when we're looking at a bigger picture here. The fact that he could actually go off and experience that and live through it and actually flip and have an amazing time. If we were a parent that just went, okay, stay home, be safe, you don't have to go, rather than gently nudging our kids towards just having a crack, as I say to my kids,
But I think there's two ends of the extreme. I think there is kids should be all right. It's going to be fun. I don't know what they're worried about. Off they go, which I have to say is 95% of schools, if not 99% of schools. It's sports day. Of course, they're going to have a good time. And I don't know many schools who actually do a social story about sports day or anything else for that matter. That's one extreme.
I don't know many teachers who actually have a good time at sports day. It's a pretty long, draining, demanding day for everybody. Do you know what I mean? Like, let's be real here. You know what I'm like. I'm like, just call a spade a spade. It is not a fun time for everybody, yet why do we tell kids that, oh, you're going to have a great time? Do you know what I mean?
It's like, we do that to kids all the time.
Oh, we do, Catherine. We so do.
You'll be right. Suck it up. Kids. It's that line of kids are resilient. Kids can cope, and they are resilient, and they can cope until they can't, and they can be so much more resilient, and they can cope with so much more if we set them up for success. And, you know, I think a lot of parents don't want to mollycoddle their anxious child, and they don't want to keep their kid at home, and all they want for their child is for their child to go out and, you know, have enjoy themselves and be part of the world, but they don't know how to create that support. And rather than have a child go out and flounder and fail, they would rather not have the kid have such a negative experience, which only makes the next experience even harder, and they'll keep them at home. And so what we're both about, Chrissy, is finding that middle ground, giving parents and educators the tools that they need so that they can, you know, support their anxious child to be successful and then have the next and the next and next success.
Correct.
Steps by little steps.
Absolutely. And we keep building on it, right?
Yes.
So in your experience then, you've created an app that is basically designed to create social stories for busy families, which we'll talk a little bit more about. But one of the things that, you know, kept coming up off the back of that post was, oh, teachers are so busy. Teachers don't have time. This is one more thing for teachers to create, which I absolutely acknowledge.
Yes.
But as someone who has created their own social stories, I'm so amazed that now there is so many, like your incredible app that's out there where you, it's all done for you sort of thing.
Yep.
And once you've sort of got a bank of them and stored like on the school, you know, we have platforms where people can access all the information. It's like, well, we do the sports day every 2 years. So we only have to create it once and then we've got it ongoing. Do you know what I mean? And so I think if we look at it from an educational lens, we're constantly reinventing the wheel, it feels like, you know, teachers we keep changing the curriculum and all, blah, blah. Anyway, that's another conversation. But once they're done, right? And they don't actually take that long. But what I want to hear from you is what are the key elements to a good social story? Like what makes it a good social story as opposed to, I suppose, just whipping one up? There's key elements. So let's hit on those.
Key elements. First of all, some of the reason I think that's, first of all, if you've heard of social stories, you might have mixed feelings. Let's be honest, most people have never heard of a social story unless they are a parent of an anxious child to the extent that they've had to see a child psychologist or a speech pathologist. For some reason, social stories, to my mind, still seem to be in the realms of the experts and the specialists, and they shouldn't be because, like you say, it's not rocket science. You let your child know what's going to happen so that they can be successful. It's not that hard. And yet they're sort of in the realms of the educators and the child therapists. So we're trying to break that down. To have a good social story, mostly stories are written from the first person. So, you know, my name's Chrissy, I'm 6 years old. Next week, I'm going to be going to sports day. So you write from first person or third person. So, you know, my school's having school will be having a sports day. There will be lots of children. You keep to the facts. You keep it short. You have one idea per story. If you are trying to cram in a 20-page manuscript, you have not done a good story. You break it down into little chunks. For kids who are, you know, nervous about riding the bus, the whole story might be just about how you get on the bus and how you get off the bus, and then a second story about what's going to happen at actual sports day. And then along with those words, we'll talk about the bit that got some flack. It's best not to tell your child how they will feel, and it's best not to put in solid statements. So you'd never say, my dentist is really nice, if you've never met the dentist, because you might feel that the dentist's not that nice. You might say, my mum says he's really nice, or my mum says, or my mum thinks that I'm going to have a great time at sports day, or most kids have a really fantastic time at sports day and they love it. That's a little bit more honest. The most important is being honest, as we all know, all the time, and not making promises that you can't keep. And if you're
can I just say, sorry to cut you off, because it was like, you know, a 60-second grab or whatever, I did go back to all of those people saying that there was actually another page on the social story that said, if you feel overwhelmed or you need a break, there will be an area you can go to or my teachers will support.
That's the next part. You give the information, but you also give your child information for how they can self-advocate or what they can do. So it's a really nice line in a social story, depending on what the topic is, keep it relevant. If it's feeling too much, I can wear my headphones, or if it's too much, I can do whatever. I can hold my mum's hand. I can use my earphones. I can do whatever will be possible. And you make sure that in that situation, your child has access to all those tools that you've told them they will have in the story. Because again, it's about reducing anxiety and promoting self-advocacy.
And I think that that's the biggest thing that I try to encourage with my kids is when you live with this fundamental philosophy of just having a crack, what's the worst that can happen? Or if things don't go well, or you are presented with challenges, what can we then do about that? Do you know what I mean? It's about supporting the child through that period or that dysregulation or whatever it is about that situation that's causing them the discomfort or the stress. Okay, well, then what are the strategies we can use to support that? Or can you bring your teddy? Or like you said, use your headphones? Or do you know what I mean?
I think for anxious kids more than anyone, that phrase of hope for the best but plan for the worst really comes to the fore. And sometimes we're so busy hoping for the best and promising that it'll be fine that we don't go through all those what ifs and what if it's not fine. And that does not build your child's confidence. It leaves them alone with their worries.
Yeah.
So having all those strategies for what if it's not good, what if, and these are all the ways that you're going to tackle it if that comes up, or these are the ways that I'm going to help you tackle it, brings that security that they need, and they can go, oh, okay, well, I know what's going to happen if it falls apart, and I will still be okay.
Yes.
So therefore, I have the confidence to give it a go.
And can I just share too, like 3 or 4 years ago, if that scenario had arisen with my son, like we're in a very different place now, but I would have actually driven him to the sports oval and showed him the oval and be like, hey, mate, this is where it's going to be happening. I remember the first time we took him on an aeroplane. We went out to the Melbourne airport. We just had a coffee and we watched all the planes taking off. Right?
You're awesome.
Well, I was like, this is like a 4-hour flight. I'm not risking it here. Do you know what I mean? But change was so difficult for him. New environments were so debilitatingly difficult for him. It was my way of setting him up for success. And it was an incredible gift, obviously, that, you know, obviously had the time to be able to help my son navigate. And I wanted to share that because I think we could do that more with kids.
Yes.
Instead of just putting them in environments and expecting them to be able to cope. Now,
nodding furiously.
It's a podcast. So it's also, I mean, even things like restaurants or where we were going to meet a group of friends one day at a new place down here. And so I just took him down there. We had a walk around, show him the toilets, had a look at the bars, like, oh yeah, this is what we're going to eat. We had a look at the menu. Do you know what I mean? And then I think it was like a week later we went there and he was great. Do you know what I mean? We call it a recce, don't we? You know that.
Yeah, it is a little reconnaissance mission.
And
so I think social story, I think that's like the top of the pyramid. That is like gold standard, A+, awesome.
Oh, well, thank you.
And if you don't quite have time for top of the pyramid, the next step down is to put it in a social story.
Correct.
And what you can do is you can Google it. You can Google what it looks like, go to their website, take a photo, put the photo in your story. I think one thing that we have to be a little bit honest about is I found, and the reason I made the app, I found social stories took freaking ages. Because a good story is short.
Yes.
And so you need to be strict with yourself. You need to get to the core of it. You need to have one idea per page. You need it to be neat. And also it needs to be a bit warm. Like no one wants a story. Like the first social story I read was so horrific. It was like, when the bell goes, my teacher will be pleased if I line up with the other students. Mm. I was like, kill me now.
Yeah.
You need to keep that warmth and that spark to keep your child engaged, and you have to keep it short, and you've got to go and find the perfect picture so that your child can truly imagine what it's going to be like, what it's going to feel like you said, what it's going to smell like. And that takes a bit of time. And Most parents don't really have time for an art
Yeah,
and craft
correct.
project before they get going.
Yeah,
And
you're right.
having a bank of stories ready to go that you can tailor to your child, that takes the process from 30 to 60 minutes down to literally 2 minutes.
And I think what one of the key points and one of the things that I'm really aspiring for in this podcast, so let's move on, is not waffling on, because we waffle so much to kids. And I think the stats are something like kids only hear 30% of what we actually say.
And you
And
know, that's why when parents are driving, for example, to the birthday party and they're talking over their shoulder, remember to say hello, make eye contact, they might say, thank the host for having you, say hello to the party person, remember to use their name, you give them their present, blah, 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 blah.
sorry, where are we
So
going
much.
again?
Have a
Exactly.
picture, explain it in a story, bang.
And you can also role play that too. I did a lot of role play with my kids when they were little, about
Oh my
those
gosh.
social behaviors. And
Can
you
we
can
go there
link
for
them
one
to the
second?
social story too, right?
I think playing things out with toys, I think giving your kids, it's what is it, multimodality experiences? You read the story, you play it out with toys, you switch characters of your toys so everyone can get a go. And again, it's like, what happens if you play out those different scenarios with the toys and then your kid feels a bit empowered? It could go this way, it could go that way. And either way, I've got a response or a solution.
Yeah, absolutely. They're so impactful in so many different ways. So we've talked a lot about preparing kids for new situations, which is awesome. And big things like you said, going to the dentist, or like recently my son had to go into hospital, which was huge for him, you know. And I did a lot of social, I didn't actually write a social story, but I Googled the hospital. I showed him where we were going. You know, we talked a lot about that. I really advocated for him with the specialist about, you know, not to over talking or over explaining, you know, all those sorts of things to him, because it would just fuel his anxiety.
I did one. I got we have a lot of injuries. I don't know why. And we saw the surgeon, and suddenly my kid was having surgery the next day. So I whipped home, made a social story straight away. But the things that I included was why it was happening, and I showed a photo of the mask, you know, when they're going to. And I likened it. We pulled out his Ventolin and his asthma puffer so he could remember what it was like to have a mask on his face. And had the photos, what it looks like in an operating with those enormous lights, you know, what it looks like, mum will be there, all of that. And the nurses just couldn't believe how good this little kid was, you know. And it's like, well, it's because I prepared him.
Same. We smashed it. And they were, the people just like, oh my gosh, he was such a superstar. I was like, yeah. We did all the back end, baby. And
It's
you know, our
not
kids
Luke,
just
is
don't
it?
turn up miraculously like this and cope with these massive
Exactly.
situations without us doing the groundwork, right? And we shouldn't expect them to. Let's just say that as well. We shouldn't expect them to. So if we're drawing this back to education, you know, if we think about the fact that schools are, or teachers often expect all of these kids to be able to cope with all of these situations and changes. And there are so many changes, and, you know, every day looks different in education. Having a bank of social stories, like we've spoken about, or using your app to create a school specific, can you talk a little bit about that? Because I know we sort of mentioned that you're in the stages of trying to create one specifically for schools. Tell us a bit about your app.
Oh, okay. Well, the app is, I just hate wasted work, Chrissy. I just think it's ridiculous. And I think there are parents across the country, across the world, all making the same, like the ones who know about it, all making the same types of social stories for their kids. It's all about preparing for preschool, preparing for school, going to the dentist. And it, like, there's so much common ground in terms of what makes our little people anxious. But in the school setting, you know, teachers are probably going to spend the time either way. If you think about school refusal, school can't, tricky drop-offs, and you've got the crying child at the school gate, the teacher's going to be spending the time. So if we just back up a little bit, what are the small changes we can make for our kids to feel safe and secure? One of them is having social stories. And if drop-offs, for example, are challenging, then you'd have a story about after mum leaves or after dad leaves. And so the next 10 minutes after, you know, for that transition into school, if that can be predictable for the child and they know who their carer will be, and they know, you know, they might start with some Play-Doh or something sensory to really calm them down, and then they're going to ease into mat time, and they're going to start their day with mat time with the rest of the class, and then they're going to go on to whatever it is. Again, it just lets that child know what's going to happen rather than being in that fight or flight the whole time.
Safe, predictable routine. Yeah.
And I think, like you say, there's a few things that come up on the school calendar that are quite tricky for kids, but are not that, you know, sports day happens every 1 to 2 years.
Mother's Day stall.
Mother's Day stall, class excursions, going on a bus, going on a train, going externally for swimming lessons, all of those sorts of things. And I think the common ground is who will look after me because my teacher might not be there. And so I think one of the key parts is who the grown-ups are going to be in the room and having their photographs where possible, and then what's going to be expected of them and how is the day going to run. And so there's kind of two components. There's the social story to give the information they need and to do the preparation. But the other part that I think is really helpful for kids is a visual plan so that they can visually check in. And a visual plan is just a picture plan, first A, then B, then C, then D. And the children, even if they're not able to read yet, can visually check in as often as they need.
Yes.
To see what's happening now and what's coming next and what's after that and how long till recess.
Mm.
And that can be, and particularly on a day that's an unusual day when they're going on an excursion or something. And that was what was beautiful about your story. Mm. You know, it kept showing the clock and the time that all the events happen, which is quite grounding. So the app that I've made is a library of those stories. And the reason it's in app form is that you choose a character for your child and they're important grown-ups. And so every story, illustration and words is completely personalized to your child. And what I'm doing at the moment is creating a version for schools and for therapists. And the school version will have everything that parents' version has, but it will create, it'll make it easier for teachers to share stories with families so that the teachers can let the family know what's happening and then the family can read the story to the child at home. Because if the teacher just gives the information, you know, so often there's all these emails between parent and teacher going, well, you need to let me know what's happening so I can prepare my child, because if I don't prepare, then it's all going to fall apart. So the teacher can make one story, send it out to all the families, and then the families can spend the time preparing their children at home.
Correct.
The teacher spends 5 or 10 minutes, families all spend 10 minutes, and then the teacher hasn't spent 10 minutes per child.
Yes, correct.
And similarly,
what most schools do, well, what in my experience of what I know what our school definitely does is that they do it as a whole class, and yeah, then they will specifically, if there are kids that need that little bit extra support, yeah, you know, then they will print out a copy or they'll email a copy to teachers. And it is also then shared across all school communication as well, like on what are they called, Seesaw and Jojo and all those communication apps that parents are using. So then parents can either read it online, which obviously, you know, we want to save paper and don't have to print them all out all the time. But it really is such a game changer for so many kids. And I really wanted to share this information further because I feel like it will reduce. I mean, it really will. I love that saying. I use this saying all the time with teachers as well. You think you don't have the time, but if you, either way, you do spend the time.
You
if you've got an anxious child or a child having a meltdown because they're not sure about what's happening,
yep,
you've got to look at, it's a real lens shift and perspective shift in, like you said, either way you spend the time.
Yep.
And once you've got one, it's done. You know what I mean? And so it's a long-term game in terms of building up the bank. And if you, it could even be something that schools did dedicated some of their professional learning time to,
totally,
where each year level sat down and created a couple of social stories and then we just whacked them all on, you know, the database for the teachers to have access to.
Or they can just get my app and it's done for them.
Oh, well, yeah, that too. Absolutely, of course, yeah. And yeah. I love that, but it's got to be really, it's harder to, I suppose, if we're looking at families as well, it can be more specific, like you said. I love that, creating the little characters. And how much would your kids love doing that as well, being
love
a part
it.
Of that?
You know, the yeah. other thing is kids just love owning their own stories.
Yes.
It's my story, it's about me, and they'll go and yes. show grandma and grampy and they'll be so excited.
Mm.
The other thing is, I think in fairness, writing a social story actually is a little bit of a skill set. Like
yeah.
we can do them relatively quickly now because we've done gazillions of them. But if you're a new grad teacher mm-hmm. and you've got all this information thrown at you and you've never written one in your life, it truly is daunting.
Yeah.
I think having a library of them so that you understand the language, you kind mm-hmm. of, it's like reading the same sorts of books 10 times in a row and you go, oh yeah, now I can do it. But I think it's a fair concern of teachers. They've got so many things they're meant to do. So many, can you just add this? Can you just add that?
Yeah, they all add
they
up.
They really do need the spade work done for them because
yeah.
they need to spend the time. You know, what's more valuable is them reading the story to the class rather
yeah.
than making the story. Because if they can read it and then answer the questions as they come up, then they can alleviate anxiety right then and there. And if all their time has been taken up making, I used to find this, I'd spend an hour making a story and then I'd run out of time to read it to my kid. What's the point?
Well, I know you are a very busy lady, Dr. Catherine Hackman, which I forgot to read your bio, by the way, at the beginning. But I'm sure you could all probably hear from this delightful conversation that Catherine is very confident and clear in her knowledge around social stories and just how beneficial they are for kids. And you would see this through your work, where you're working with kids at the moment.
No. This is what I'm really interested in. Is where, having had a very anxious little guy myself when in preschool years, is I feel that the education system and the healthcare system both kind of fail kids who have low to moderate level anxiety. It's not until your kid is really flailing that you might get some help. And I just think that Australia as a country is pretty good at healthcare, but we could be better at preventative healthcare.
Yes.
And if we just get ahead of the ball and shore up our kids before things happen, we're going to reduce child anxiety. And I think that that's forgotten. And it's not until the wheels are really squeaking and falling off that we provide these kinds of supports for our kids. And I just, like you, think we can set our kids up for success. Why aren't we doing it? And I think we're not doing it because people don't know about it. It's kind of the realms of the therapists and the specialists. You're certainly not going to see a pediatrician for this when you've got 12 other things to do and you've had a 6-month wait to get there. And so I just think it's about making these resources available and practical. I think parents don't have time for more self-help books. They just want the tools that they need to support their child in the moment.
Absolutely. And you know, I'm all about preventative, proactive rather than reactive. And I'm all about making life as easy as possible for parents and teachers. So thank you so much. I will link in the show notes for everybody listening the link to Carol Gray's work, where it all originated. Yeah. So people can go and people who want a deep dive on the research, which I know some of us do, just to get a bit more of an understanding about how social stories evolved. And I'll also link people over to your website, which is?
CourageousKidsApp.com.
Yep. And on Insta?
Courageous Kids App.
No, we love it. Keep it unified. And people can follow along with the work that you're doing as well and sharing on Instagram. And
if they'd like to just have a free trial, you can download it free from Google Play and the App Store. Just search for Courageous Kids and you get access to a whole library of social stories, visual plans, games, all with the goal of setting your child up for new experiences.
Amazing. And I think I'll just leave off this beautiful conversation. Thank you so much for giving up your time and sharing your knowledge and creativity with us on the Child Charmer podcast. We are all about celebrating incredible brains, as you know, through my work. And one thing we just want to take away from this conversation is brains love to feel safe. And anything we can do to support our kids, you know, take those little steps as they move out into the world and grow into their own little beautiful selves, it's always going to be a winner in my book. So thank you for creating such a wonderful tool for our kids and families and teachers.
Thanks, Chrissy. My favourite topics.
Well, Brain Builders, that's a wrap on another episode of the Child Charmer podcast. I truly hope you love the discussion just as much as me. But don't stop here. Make sure you head on over and check out the Brain Builder Shop. Here you'll find all of my amazing therapeutic resources, online courses, webinars, and of course, my two amazing children's books, which, let's face it, are really for the adults too. All of these therapeutic resources have been created by me so that you can continue to grow yourself as you grow your child. And most importantly,